Levy, Grammy-winning duo for King and Country, Rebecca St. James, Helen Smallbone, plus actor Jonathan Jackson. That's Trey Corley at the Music City Connection. And I'm your announcer, Keith Bilbrey. And now, here's Mike Huckabee!
Welcome, everybody. You know, remember in the old days of Ed Sullivan, he would come out and say, I got a really big shoe. Well, actually, I do have a big shoe. It's a size 13, so that's really true tonight. But we really have a really big show. You are going to enjoy every single minute of it. And thank you for joining us. We've got a great studio audience here in our theater. And we're just thrilled that what you're about to experience over the next 1 hour is, I believe, going to be some of the finest television you have seen, maybe ever, but certainly in a long time. But just so you remember, it's been just over 6 months since demonic forces of Hamas burst over the borders of Israel and massacred over 1,200 Israeli civilians on an early Shabbat morning, October the 7th of last year. They didn't just systematically murder men, women, children, and infants. They butchered them. They violently raped women in front of their families, placed babies in ovens to torture them, set fire to elderly people in wheelchairs, and slaughtered teenagers and children in the most indescribable manner. They took over 250 hostages, 132 of them who still are being held by Hamas terrorists, and five of them are American citizens. Yet while Joe Biden publicly calls for the ouster of the Israeli prime minister, he says absolutely nothing about the American hostages, nor has he demanded their immediate release. In the early days of the Israeli effort to eradicate the cancer of Hamas, President Biden was very supportive of Israel. But after repeated heckling from anti-Semitic leftists here in the country who are calling for the genocide of the Jews, Biden, Secretary of State, Blinken and prominent Democrat legislators have seemingly turned against Israel. It's disgraceful to turn our backs on one of the only true friends this country has in the entire Middle East, and then to show sympathy for the masterminds of the most uncivilized and barbaric acts toward Jews since the Holocaust. Every civilian death in Gaza, the ones among the Palestinians, it's tragic, but largely avoidable if Hamas would stop placing their own civilians next to rocket launchers and military installations. And when there were unintended deaths of civilians, Israel took full responsibility and even relieved the military officials who were responsible. Let us not forget that when our own U.S. military accidentally killed 10 members of a civilian family in Afghanistan, seven of whom were children, no world leader called for President Biden to step down, and not one U.S. military officer was held responsible and fired. More than ever, we need to stand with our Jewish friends in Israel as they fight for their very survival. And we need to stand with our Jewish friends across the world as they face the worst levels of hate and violence from radical and genocidal forces that would truly carry out the cry of "from the river to the sea," which, by the way, is a call for the murder of every Jew in Israel. When I visited Israel in December, I visited with hostage families, survivors from October the 7th, and government officials, including Prime Minister Netanyahu. And I was moved by the sense of deep anguish that was felt among the people of Israel, who were trying to grapple with the violation of their tiny nation and threat to their security posed by Hamas. For Christians, we can and we must grieve the death of any civilian, whether Israeli or Palestinian. But this war is not a war of equal guilt. Israel was cowardly attacked, its people were savagely murdered, and those who did it were even gleeful in their brutal atrocities. Israel has no choice but to destroy every vestige of Hamas. Otherwise, it would be as if a physician treated a cancer patient only to a point and then said, we removed most of the cancer with surgery and chemotherapy, but we're going to leave the rest of it because it's painful and expensive to continue treatment. Doing that would result in the cancer coming back with a vengeance and ultimately killing the patient. Israel can't be partially successful by simply wounding the cancer of Hamas. They must destroy it, or Hamas will carry out what it has repeatedly promised, which is to stage more attacks like October 7th again and again. America cannot pretend to be pro-Israel while acting to assist the survival of Hamas. I'm really glad that in the days following 9/11, Netanyahu did not call for the ouster of our president and ask us to have a ceasefire on al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And we need to act like an ally. We need to act like a friend to Israel at a time when they have very few friends and many, many enemies. And just for the record, I want to be known as being a friend. Well, tonight we've got a very fun show because the entire show revolves around a very special family whose story is told in a new movie called Unsung Hero. You're going to get a sneak peek at the film. You're going to meet its stars and the amazing family behind it and enjoy their music, some of the most popular music in the world today. To kick it all off, I want you to welcome Luke and Joel Smallbone, better known as the four-time Grammy-winning duo for King and Country. I have been so looking forward to having this show, getting you guys on and talking about something that I think it's amazing. You know, your music is world-changing. You've done books, but now a movie based on the story of your family's life. Pretty exciting.
Is it true, Governor, that this is the first time anyone's taken over the whole show?
First time. Absolutely. We've never done this before.
How about that?
We love you guys enough that the entire show is all about you.
Thank
you. You're smiling like
that's
you.
Nice to show.
He loves that, doesn't he?
I feel a lot of pride in this moment, you know?
Well, you know, there's so much of this that it's fascinating because there was a lot before there was a movie.
That's right. Yeah.
The music, then there was a book. It was about really the life of your mom and her extraordinary influence in your life. Your dad as well, of course, but we had your mom on a few months back and talked to her about the book. How did the movie come about?
Yeah, so just to give some context, rewind back, you know, to many, many years ago, seemingly these days, to where we were originally born in Australia. Hopefully you can still tell. It is true, you Americans have jacked up.
I thought that was an Alabama accent. It
not
sure
quite.
Sounded like that.
Though we are from the deep, deep, deep South.
The deep
okay,
South.
There you are, yeah.
But it is true, you Americans have jacked up our accent, so thanks for that. But born in Australia, our dad was a concert promoter back there. And on one particular tour that he brought back, we lost everything that we had. As a family, we lost the house, we lost the car, we lost the life savings. And so Dad was looking for a fresh start for his career, for the family. And so he thought it would be a good idea to move his six kids and his wife, who was 6 months pregnant at the time, to Nashville. And that's exactly what we did. But soon after we arrived in Nashville, my dad lost the job opportunity that he had here. And so we were stranded, no friends, no family, sleeping on beds made out of clothes, didn't have any way for our little sister to be born in a hospital. I weren't always quite sure where the next meal was going to come from. Didn't have a car at the time. So the list went on and on. And I've told that story for quite a number of years at our concerts and had a lot of people come up and say, man, Luke, you should write a book. And the truth is, Joel and I were homeschooled, so we don't read or write very well. And
shout out to the homeschoolers.
We thought maybe we should make a movie instead. And look, the heartbeat behind the movie is this. I believe in the power of family. I think family is more important today than it ever has been in the history of the world. But yet we don't value it the same way that we should. And Mother Teresa says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. Mm-hmm. And that's really the heartbeat behind the film.
We're going to watch a trailer of the film, get a little taste of it, and then we're going to talk to Joel and Luke about what we're going to see in the rest of it.
On my last tour back home, I lost a lot of money.
How can we say goodbye to everything that we know and love?
This is my last chance. I want to do something that matters.
However you guys feel about being here, we need to pray for everything that we need.
But this becoming is harder than it seems.
But look around you. Your family, your faith.
Feels like
that's what makes you rich in life.
Welcome to Nashville, y'all.
I don't know what tomorrow's gonna bring. This is our exciting adventure. Together.
Fire! You have been given a beautiful voice.
She's the special one, David.
Trigger's getting other folks to see it.
Does anybody really care what a 16-year-old girl thinks about God?
I'm trying to protect her, and it will never be enough!
It's gonna be dangerous and scary. It's going to be so hard that you want to go back. And giving in, it's not an option. We've got to fight our way forward.
Your family, they're not in the way. They are the way.
It takes a lot to live out your dream. Hard work and sacrifice. I trained this to be like you. You're my hero, Mom.
From England.
Australia.
Australia. I wish I had an accent.
I already am dying to see the film. Joel, most people know you as the other half of For King and Country, but you not only wrote the script to this film, you directed it, and you play the role of your own father, which I find incredibly intriguing, probably more difficult than writing or directing.
I have dubbed it a very expensive therapy session. it was interesting. We've been doing a lot of reflection lately just because we're right on the precipice of it being released into theaters. And I did not anticipate writing or even co-directing, you know, but as musicians, you kind of have to be all things to all people all the time. Mm-hmm. You're the writer, you're the performer, you're the producer, you're the marketing. And so it just kind of, the way the cookie crumbled, I just sort of stepped into these roles incidentally. But from the beginning, mm-hmm. I had always felt inclined to play dad. I can't even really explain it. It was Luke came up with the idea in 2020 and called a producer friend and said, what if we start putting this into development? It was one of the first conversations. I remember saying, I think it would just be so fascinating. We know dad so well. I'm roughly dad's age when he moved now. And so I've always seen this story from Luke and I were 5 and 7 when we moved. So we've always seen it from a childlike perspective. But to now experience it, not only in writing, but to literally enact the story and put on my shoulders, you know, all of the strain and the stress and the pride and the insecurity and the protectiveness that he felt over the family and really dive deep into his shoes. Man, Governor, it has changed the way I see him. There's a stake in the ground of empathy that started at the production of the film and will take me, I think, to my grave, yeah.
I think one of the most fascinating things is that this film, it's a true story, but it's a film that is inspirational because it's all about faith and it's all about family, two things that this country and this world truly needs more of. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to add your sister and your mom. We're going to have quite
the
conversation.
You're in for it.
Oh, I've been
You're in for it.
Once we brought you guys out here. We bring them out here. We'll bring a little bit of civility to the whole process. Right. That's what we're going to do. And we are going to continue this very special episode devoted to For King and Country and the brand new movie that is coming out April the 26th called Unsung Hero. Keith Bilbrey is standing by. He is our unsung hero. He'll tell us what's coming up next.
Well, Helen Smallbone and Rebecca St. James joined the conversation for an inside look into the family story of Unsung Hero. Then later tonight, For King and Country perform with special guest Amy Grant. You don't want to miss it. MikeHuckabee.com and sign up for his free newsletter and follow at GovMikeHuckabee on X.
Welcome back. On this very special edition of the show, we're talking about the inspiring story of the Smallbone family told in the new film Unsung Hero. My next guest are the mother of that family and her daughter, one of the biggest names in contemporary Christian music, 9 number one hits and a Grammy Award to prove it. Please welcome Helen Smallbone and Rebecca St. James. Great to have you guys here. Helen, in so many ways, this is a film about you and your husband, David, unsung heroes. You came here. The world fell apart for you. Mm-hmm. You had nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing. Not a house, not a car, not a job, income. That's pretty much rock bottom.
Yeah, we lost everything before we left Australia. We came here hoping for a new opportunity, a new start. But yeah, you arrive, you've got your suitcases. We had 16 suitcases. There were 6 of us and I was pregnant. At that point, I had not even been to a doctor. So it's a real, I mean, you're in a very vulnerable scenario.
Were you feeling abandoned by God? Did you ever feel like, Lord, why have you forsaken me?
Actually, no. To tell you the truth, I think when each of us faces a crisis in our lives, it shows us where our foundation is, what's our strength and where does it come from? And we were very fortunate, both David and I, to grow up in Christian homes. We had great role modeling from our parents. We had a strong foundation of faith. And it was our faith that showed us through. And I knew that leaving Australia was right. Had no idea where God was taking us necessarily. Had hopes, obviously, and dreams. But our foundation was definitely Him. And He turned up. I mean, God promises He'll never leave us or forsake us, that He's with us to the end of the age. And we saw it, that He would provide us with our daily needs, that He would care for us, and we just saw miracles.
What are some of the things that you did see? Because, I mean, you know, you've just described a life of almost homelessness, nothing.
Well, we did have a house, a rental home.
But how did God start providing for your family?
Well, we moved into our rental home. We had no car. We had no furniture, no beds. I had brought sheets. So we put the winter clothes, because it was still sort of fairly warm, under the kids, and I would roll up the sheets around them, and that was, I would use like a sweater or whatever for a pillow, and that was the kids, they were the beds. They thought it was grand because they could actually play baseball, cricket, in the living room, which is like baseball. Kids are so adaptable. I mean, I think they're looking at parents to see, okay, how are you coping with this? And when we thought it was a bit of an adventure and whatever, then they followed suit.
It's true.
You have to look back and say, His hand is mighty.
His hand is mighty. He's given me a verse that I think sums up our life, and even in this stage with the movie, sums it up even more, and it's Ephesians 3:20. And my paraphrase is, God can do much, much more than anything we can ask or imagine through His for His glory and through His strength. And He's done that. He's fulfilled that. He also gave me another promise. We were touring at one point with Rebecca. We were about to tour for 13 months. And we were homeschooling, and so we were all going together. And I was like, I can just see these kids one day. I'm going to sit back and say, Mum, you just ruined my life. I mean, you know, we don't know anything. Like, we're going to have to go back and do study, you know, like. And so I went to God and I said, what's my expectation here? Like, what am I meant to do? How am I meant to view this? Because they were working 10-hour days, 12-hour days. Couldn't ask them to do schoolwork as well. And he gave me a promise, and the promise was I'll teach them what they need to know. And he's fulfilled that. Mm. I can look at each one of them, and he has done that.
Joel, you played the role of your dad. We talked about it before. We have a little clip of a part of the film. This is playing the role of your dad. I want you to take a look, and we're going to talk about it when we come back.
Matt.
It's just a big risk.
Matt, please. Don't do this. Don't do this to her. I'm begging you. I can step away. I can take it. Just don't do this to my little girl. Man, she's just a kid.
David, it's business. You know that. She may as well know it too.
Joel, that must have been a very difficult scene, highly emotional, a time in your family's life when you thought Rebecca was about to be catapulted into an extraordinary music career and it all just fell apart all of a sudden. And it was like one more dream dashed. Did your dad give you some personal insight into what all that was about?
Well, first of all, that was a very severe cutoff. I was just getting going in that scene.
Like, we were ready.
But we got to see the whole movie to get that part.
The whole thing away.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I should say, too, that, man, what I love about this film, too, is this juxtaposition of you have moments like this where you drop into David and Helen's world and into their hearts and into their minds. And then there's a good portion of the film, you're inside the kids' minds where it's this adventure, you know. And we're banding together and we're playing cricket in the house. We're raking leaves, we're mowing lawns, and it's fun, and it's fun, and it's funny. And so it's this great adventure drama. But yeah, you dropped into like that's the guts of the film. And it's terrifying, man. I gotta be honest. You know, you're trying to honor mom and dad, but you also don't want to make it a glory project, because that's not the point, you know. No one can really relate to something that just sort of shaves off all of the ugliness and just highlights all the good. And so mom and dad were really kind in letting us, you know, steward their story. I found out something just a couple of days ago that I didn't know. Because we let them read the script beforehand, you know, to get this sort of blessing on it. And dad said to me a couple of days ago, he's like, oh, you told me, mom. She was like, oh, no, David never read the script before you went into production. And we had sent it to him. He had sort of all but lied and said he had read the script.
But was using the word we.
But
we.
I would say, I really respect him for it, because he's a big personality. I'm pretty similar to him. He's pretty similar to me. And he knew that if he sort of did read it, that he would interject himself into it, and that wouldn't be the most trusting thing to do. And so it was very courageous of him to not only let us steward his story, but then even when we screened it with him, it was so fascinating. We screened it for the whole family, and mom, you know, wept at the end, and we all got around and started praying, and dad went and talked to like the projector guy.
And somehow, I'm not surprised by any of that.
Yeah. Rebecca, but I think it's been a journey for him, you know?
Well, sure. I'm sure it has been for all of you. Rebecca, you know, a lot of this is about you were sort of the tip of the spear for the family going out and starting a music career. You must have had some just overwhelming emotion that suddenly you're going to be thrust in, almost the family's going to be depending on you.
I don't think I was very aware of any of that at that point. You know, I think mom put it, you know, hit the nail on the head that it was an adventure for us kids. We did feel that, and that God was taking care of us, and mom and dad had it. And so even when I would do auditions for different, you know, record labels and stuff, or I'd be singing at a church and record people would come. I didn't feel this weight of this has to work out. I'm carrying the family, because we were all pitching in. We were raking lawns and mowing yards and cleaning houses and babysitting. And I was doing a bit of singing, you know. So it was just, we were all pitching in. And I think there was a sense of community as a family. We were praying together. And I was not caring at that point. Yeah.
Well, we have a lot more to talk about. Unsung Heroes hits the theaters nationwide on April the 26th. And we have all the links so that you can get your tickets in advance. If you go to Huckabee.tv, we will connect you directly how to do that. We got a lot more to come. Keith Bilbrey is going to tell you about it. He's going to do it right about now.
Well, up next, Rebecca St. James joins for King and Country for a musical performance. And still to come, actor Jonathan Jackson talks about his role in the family's movie right here on Huckabee.
And welcome back. I'm visiting with Grammy-winning contemporary Christian music artist, author, and actress Rebecca St. James, who's about to perform with her brothers for King and Country. Rebecca, yes. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Your whole family is so creative, and right now you and your husband, you're working on a book.
Yes, we
What's
are.
It going to be?
Well, it's really our story separately, then together, and what we've learned about just life and faith and God and just our journey in parenting and a marriage, very authentic. I think there's a lot of interest in our story right now as a family. And yeah. I just think sharing some of that behind the scenes, the vulnerability, but how God has redeemed so many times in our lives. I think that's encouraging. I think it's a time where we need to be encouraged in our, as you said earlier, in our families, in our faith.
I think after this film comes out, there's going to be even a real uptick in the interest in the whole family. And one of the things that people are going to see is that you're performing with your brothers. So what's that like? I mean, they probably were a nuisance to you when they were young.
No, I mean, I think I was the bossy big sister, right, boys?
100%, he says.
Yeah, I was that. But we're friends. Like, there's a deep friendship and a deep love and respect for each other, and that's really beautiful.
Well, you're going to sing with them right now,
yes.
I think. So as always, you can keep up with all the latest news from Rebecca St. James. If you go to Huckabee.tv, we will connect you. Right now, we have a very special treat. Performing You Make Everything Beautiful. Here are Rebecca St. James and For King and Country.
Serenity to accept things I cannot change. Grant me the courage, Lord, to change what I can, wisdom to know the difference. In my weakness you can shine, in your strength I can fly. You make everything beautiful. You make everything new. You make everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. Grant me serenity, Lord, and patience, for things will take time. Grant me freedom to walk a new path, and let me feel your love. In my weakness you can shine, in your strength I can fly. And you make everything beautiful. Everything new. You make everything beautiful in its time. time in your time, it's beautiful. Lifting open hands to you, my Savior, beautify my soul. Knowing you redeem my pain and failure, purify my soul. Purify my soul. And you make everything, everything beautiful. You make everything, everything new. You make everything, everything beautiful. In its time, in your time, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. In your time, in your time, it's beautiful.
It's not over yet. Actor Jonathan Jackson is next. Then more music for King and Country with Amy Grant right here on Huckabee.
Samaritan's Purse continues to do such important work in Jesus' name because of the grace of God that continues to pour out through your generous giving. It's your help that makes a difference in the lives of people. And you may never meet them, but the impact, it's forever. If you haven't already, please call Samaritan's Purse today or visit their website. It's real simple. You can scan the QR code right there on your television screen, and then you can see how you can be a part of the global outreach of Samaritan's Purse and make a difference for someone today. Thanks, and God bless. Our next guest is a 5-time Emmy-winning actor, writer, and musician whom you probably already know from hits like General Hospital, Nashville, and Insomnia. An unsung hero, he plays legendary Christian music star and record executive Eddie DeGarmo, who signed Rebecca St. James to her first major label contract. Please welcome Jonathan Jackson. Jonathan, great having you with us.
Thanks so much. Thank you for having me.
Did you have a particular interest? Because, I mean, a lot of the interest that you have, musician, actor, you're presented this script. What was your first reaction to it?
Well, to be honest, my first reaction was really less about the character and more about the film as a whole. Mm-hmm. I was just interested to see, okay, what is this story? What is this film about? And I read it on an airplane, and when I was in tears. I was so moved. And I didn't know what I would, you know, when you read a script, you kind of go, gosh, I hope it's good, but I don't know. And I just looked over at my wife with tears in my eyes, and I said, this is really something. And then after that, I said, okay, let me look at this character. Let me see if I can do this. And then, you know, it just seemed like a lot of fun because Eddie DeGarmo is, you know, kind of an eccentric, interesting person.
Yes, he is.
That's a good way to put it. I think that, but he's an amazing and gifted guy that has had such a vast influence on contemporary Christian music. So you got to meet him in the course of filming the film.
Yes.
Was it intimidating to meet the guy that you're playing?
It probably should have been. I've been working as an actor since I was very young. You know, I was 11 years old when I started on General Hospital. And I think one of the benefits of starting that young is you just stay focused on, you know, it's... So no, I didn't get nervous. In fact, Eddie had such a kind of gentle, poetic soul that I felt very comfortable. Yeah.
And Rebecca, this is also a film in which you portray, not yourself, but you have a cameo role
yes.
as a flight attendant. Is this from the flight over from Australia?
There I am.
There you are in all your glory.
All 5 seconds or 10 seconds of me. Yes, it was a very hard role. I really had to focus on, you know, being present to this role.
It's like the Alfred Hitchcock movie, because every film that he ever did, he played this brief cameo role where he walked on and you had to really watch for it.
Yeah.
But that was your moment.
That was my moment. I have done a bit of acting. I've had some lead roles and stuff, but it was just fun being on set. My husband was very involved in this movie as well, and so it was fun having so many family that were involved and then to to, you know, be on there for a little hot minute. And but a lot of my siblings, actually, I think just about everybody is in the film somewhere. They call it Easter eggs. It's like a buried little treasure mm-hmm. that you can kind of find throughout the film. So when you go see it, look for the family members.
Now, the song that you just did goes throughout the film. It's sort of woven throughout, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's a song, actually, that Luke and I wrote together 13 years ago. So it's not quite as old as what the movie portrays, but it's a song that says you make everything beautiful in your time. Like, it's a song of redemption. And really, it's the theme of the movie is that there's hope, even in the hardest of times in our lives, that God can redeem it. And I use that song to audition for Eddie in an important scene towards the end of the film.
So when you did audition for Eddie and he was taken with you, did you guys capture that in the film and make it so that we will get to see this moment? Because that was life-changing, not just for you, but for the whole family.
Yeah, it was. In real life, it was in a church. I was singing worship songs, and he came to see me do it. And so it's very similar in the film. And, I mean, Jonathan does a wonderful job of capturing Eddie. And you bring such humor to the table, too. Like, you just embodied this deep well of, like, mysteriousness that is Eddie DeGarmo. But you brought humor to the table with him, and it adds so much to the film.
And Jonathan, tell us about what you hope that those of us who will see this film, and I hope it's every single person who's watching this show and many millions of others, what do you hope people will take away from it? What did you take away from it?
I think it's very timely, this movie, because so many people in the last, 4 years in particular have been going through incredible upheaval, moving states, moving jobs, economic trials. And this film shows the power and beauty of family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as the Mother Teresa quote, you know, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. I mean, I think that really, I couldn't think of anything more powerful than that. You know, the other beautiful line that's kind of throughout the movie is, you know, your family is not in the way. You know, your family is the way.
Yeah.
And I think so often in our society, in our culture, we can fall into this idea of worshiping ambition or career, sort of individualism, and it is the family. It's the most beautiful thing we have, and that's what, you know, moved me about the film.
Well, I can't wait for people to see it, and if you want to keep up with all of Jonathan Jackson's music, books, movies, and more, because he's a creative guy and he's pretty busy, got a lot of stuff going on, if you want to follow him on social media as well, we have all the links you'll need at Huckabee.tv. We will connect you, get you hooked up. Right now, the unsung hero of our show, that's B. Keith Bilbrey. He's going to tell us what's coming up.
Well, thank you.
After the break, we'll play a game highlighting some of the most bizarre ordinances in the country, leading to the question, is it law or no? That's next on Huckabee. Huckabee next week for Huck's hero Gary Luttrell and Chef Stacy Lynn Harris.
Well, we've got a lot of music going on tonight, but I'll tell you one thing that is still consistent with every show that we do. We got the greatest team of musicians in America with Trey Corley and the Music City Connection. Would you give them another big name? Well, I'm talking again with Luke and Joel Smallbone, better known as the four-time Grammy-winning duo for King and Country. Now, guys, you know, there's a lot of music in this film, and some of it has to do with other artists that you've invited in, Lee Bryce, Michael W. Smith, your sister. Yeah. Tell us how that all happened and how it integrates into the film.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I think when we realized that we were making a movie, we thought, well, you know, there's a lot of people that do, you know, inspired by soundtracks in what we call
we
music.
We are musicians.
We are. Yes. Music is our day job, is what we call. Uh-huh. You know, movies is kind of like the hobby, I guess, in some cases. And so
it was a four-year hobby. So
it's an expensive hobby and a very stressful one. The gray hairs show it. But so when it came to the music, we just thought, well, there's some great songs that we grew up with that. Mm. Maybe we could reintroduce some of the all-time great songs that were, you know, written. And, you know, C.S. Lewis has this great quote where he says, you know, only books worth reading are the ones that are 50 years or, you know, older. Hmm. In some cases, it's like songs. Like if a song is still around, yeah, and it's been 20 years, it's a great song.
It's a great song.
And so you take a song like Place in This World is an absolute masterpiece, that the lyric of that might be more potent today than it was back when it was released. So it's that type of thought was what we went into, thinking through, what if we picked this song and took this song and got some of the friends together. And you
guys were thinking about making a phenomenal soundtrack that will also be a great complement to the film.
What's fascinating, we did not spare any expense when it came to time and effort. I mean, literally more features on this inspired by than any record we've ever done. You mentioned Lee Bryce,
yeah,
Michael W. Smith, Lecrae, Stryper, Amy Grant,
yeah,
Sleeping at Last, Rebecca St. James, Hilary Scott from Lady A. So that's eight and counting. And it was just a blast, man. We got to explore. There's hip hop on there. There's country on there. There's rock on there. And so we got to explore a bunch of different lanes in the Inspired By.
Well, I think that's going to be as much fun getting the soundtrack as it will to watch the film. Right. But, you know, we're going to have a little fun with you guys, okay? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
We're going to play a game. I'm going to read a law.
Okay.
And you guys are going to tell me whether you think it is a real law or if we just made it up out of thin air.
So you're going to ask the homeschoolers,
yes,
if something's a law.
We'll ask.
Now, we are American citizens, though, and so we probably know more about America.
I'll bet you, being naturalized citizens, know more about the Constitution than 95% of American citizens. Anyway, this game is called Law or Naw. Okay? All of our audience has these paddles.
You spelt no or nah.
This is Southern for no.
Oh.
This is how we say it in the South. Maybe not how you do it in Australia. But in Arkansas, we would say or nah.
Okay.
So here we go. And Keith, Trey, everyone's got cards. All our audience does. Here we go. In the state of Tennessee, is it a law that you cannot keep ice cream in your back pocket? Do you think that's a law or a nah? Let's see those paddles. Keith, I'm looking for yours and Trey's. Trey says nah. Most of the band says nah.
Well,
actually, it is a gnaw. Now,
guys,
ice cream in your back pocket was supposedly an effective method of stealing a horse because the horse would be tempted to follow along the sweetness of the ice cream in your back pocket. Okay. But it never was a law because it was kind of stupid to put ice cream in your back pocket, especially in the summertime.
I mean, I would have questioned Tennessee.
I would have questioned it, too. I want to know who came up with that one because that's really bizarre.
It was a homeschooler. Okay, here's our next question. We're going to stay in the state of Tennessee. Is it a law that you cannot pick up roadkill on the way home and fry it for supper?
That is a law.
Is that a law or a gnaw?
I'm with you. That's a law.
I think that's a law.
All right, let's see. Most everyone here says that is... Everyone looking around, almost everybody is saying
it's got to be
a law.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but maybe that's too much common sense.
Yeah, that might be. Exactly. Okay, here's the answer. No.
No!
In Tennessee...
It should be a law.
Here's the deal. You can take home
roadkill right?
and yes. eat it as long as it is a non-protected species. So if you, let's say, if you run over a spotted owl, you can't take that home and eat it. Okay?
That's where you went? A spotted owl?
A spotted owl, because it's a protected species.
Okay.
Now, if you run over an eagle... And the judge has you up before him, and he says, how did that eagle taste? You just say, it was a lot like a spotted owl.
I feel like that is quite in between a law and a gnaw.
Well, here's the truth, though. If you hit a deer...
You can eat it.
You can eat it. You just have to notify the TWRA of the accident. And then they will come over and have a stew with you. So how about that? Okay, let's go to number three. Is roller skating banned in the Capitol building in the state of Tennessee here in Nashville? Apparently, they'll tolerate all kinds of nonsense.
That's obscure enough to be a law. And here's the deal. I'm just playing the law on averages. If it's been two
gnaws,
it's got to be a law.
Okay, well.
You know what I'm saying?
Look at him, Mr. Look at the audience. It's almost, I bet it's 95%. And you know what? The answer is law.
Yay!
Hey.
Here it is. And guess when it came from? The Ledger from July 6, 1870 was when this law passed. All I can figure is they must have had one special July 4th celebration.
Some grumpy governor was very upset that year. It was like, we're doing a law.
Look, I want you to know, Joel, I'm an old guy, but I'm not that old. I wasn't here in 1870. All right, here we go. Last one. Aren't you happy to hear that? Last one.
This is fun.
It's from my home state of Arkansas.
Okay. Right.
Is it a law that you cannot honk your horn after 9 p.m. at a drive-through restaurant? Is that a law? Or is it a gnaw? Put your paddles up, please.
By the way,
law or gnaw?
You can tell whether it's a law or gnaw based on the way the governor puts his paddle.
No, you can't.
So it's definitely a law.
Oh, you can't.
It's a
law. I'm switching.
It is a law in Arkansas. Now, here's the fact of this law. It was created in the 1920s when curb service was somewhat of a fad, and you had to honk your horn in order to place your order. All right. I don't make the law, I just question them. And remember, it's only a law because somebody was dumb enough to make it a law. That's why. So to all of you, thanks for playing Law or Gnaw. And don't go away. We still have a lot more with a special guest coming up. Keith, tell them about it.
Well, Roger Miller always said you can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. I don't know. Stay right where you are. Amy Grant joins for King and Country with a very special performance when we come back on Huckabee.
Our deepest thanks to the Smallbone family for helping us do this very special show. Unsung Hero opens in theaters all over the country April the 26th. To get advance tickets to a theater near you and for links to For King and Country and Rebecca St. James, just go to Huckabee.tv. We have the links. Right now, performing Lead Me On, the acoustic version, with Grammy Award winner Amy Grant. Please welcome For King and Country.
Shoulder to the wheel for someone else's selfish gain. Here there is no choosing, work in the clay, wearing their anger like a ball and chain. Amy.
Fire in the field underneath the blazing sun. But soon the sun was faded, freedom was a song I heard them singing. When the day was done, singing to the Holy One.
Lead me on, lead me on, to the place where the river runs into your keeping. Oh, lead me on, lead me on. The way to deliver us comforts the seeking. Lead on. Waiting for the train, labeled with a golden star. Heavy-hearted boarding, whispers in the dark.
Voices like thunder in a mighty roar.
The Lord.